This is Free Speech Radio News for Tuesday, May 21st, 2013. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina. Coming up, search and rescue continues in Oklahoma as residents recover from a devastating tornado amid warnings of floods and more storms. Executives from Apple face tough questions in Washington after a report finds the tech giant avoided billions in taxes. And we'll go to Zimbabwe, where human rights advocates say the government is using fear and intimidation ahead of elections. Those stories and more coming up.
I'm Nell Abram with FSRN Headlines. Search and rescue efforts are ongoing in Newcastle and Moore, Oklahoma, after a series of storms spawned a devastating tornado that killed at least 24 people, 9 of them children. According to the National Weather Service, a severe thunderstorm watch continues across southeastern Oklahoma through early this evening, and a tornado watch is in effect over much of north-central Texas. President Barack Obama said today that he has directed his staff to provide Oklahoma with everything it needs right away, adding that FEMA was already in place in advance of the first wave of storms.
Yesterday, FEMA activated urban search and rescue teams from Texas, Nebraska, and Tennessee to assist in the ongoing search and rescue efforts, and a mobile response unit to boost communications and logistical support. So the people of Moore should know that their country will remain on the ground, there for them, beside them, as long as it takes. For there are homes and schools to rebuild, businesses and hospitals to reopen, their parents to console, first responders to comfort, and, of course, frightened children who will need our continued love and attention.
We'll have more on the situation in Oklahoma later in the newscast. Stay tuned. Community support in Sebastian, Florida is growing for an 18-year-old girl expelled from school and facing criminal charges after a consensual relationship with another female student. Earlier in the school year, then 17-year-old Caitlin Hunt, known as Kate, and a then 14-year-old fellow student started dating. They were both on the school basketball team, and the younger girl was in advanced classes with older students. The younger girl's parents reported the relationship to local authorities, who charged the now 18-year-old Hunt with felony lewd and lascivious battery on a child between the ages of 12 and 16. One coach at the school told WPTV the same-sex element is what has set this case apart.
We have freshmen on our varsity team, and I knew that some of them were dating senior male baseball players, and it shouldn't be this big of a deal.
Despite two court orders, school district officials expelled the popular teen from Sebastian River High School. Authorities have offered her a deal where she could plead guilty to child abuse, spend 2 years on house arrest, and be placed on a sex offender registry. If convicted, she faces up to 15 years in jail. In New York, thousands of gay rights advocates took to the streets of Greenwich Village yesterday after a gay man was killed over the weekend in what officials are calling a hate crime.
Hey, hey.
32-year-old Mark Carson was shot in the head early Saturday morning after a brief exchange with a man using anti-gay language. A suspect was arrested shortly after the shooting. The murder took place just one block from the iconic Stonewall Inn, where a 1969 uprising helped spark the gay rights movement in the U.S. In Washington, D.C., the mayor's office announced a web portal that will make it easier for charter schools seeking to move into vacant former public schools. 12 of the 15 D.C. public schools slated for closure will be made available for long-term lease agreements. Last week, U.S. District Judge James Boasberg cleared the way for the school closures, ruling that despite the disproportionate effect on children of color and students with disabilities, the move did not violate their civil rights. Guatemala's highest court has overturned the landmark genocide conviction and prison sentence for former dictator Efrén Ríos Montt. Shannon Young reports.
In the 3-2 decision Monday, Guatemala's Constitutional Court ruled in favor of an appeal presented by Efrain Ríos Montt's legal team. The ruling overturns the former general's conviction on charges of genocide and crimes against humanity and vacates his 80-year prison sentence. It also sets the clock back on the trial to April 19th, the day after Constitutional Court Judge Carol Flores annulled the trial's proceedings to that point. Sending the trial back to a date of a separate legal dispute adds another layer of complexity to the ruling and creates the possibility of the annulment of all evidentiary proceedings. The May 10th conviction found that as commander-in-chief, Rios Montt was responsible for the deaths of more than 1,700 Maya Ishil villagers in his 17-month-long military rule in the early 1980s. If and when the genocide trial will reconvene is currently unclear. Shannon Young, FSRN, Oaxaca.
According to a U.S. military spokesperson, all Wi-Fi access at the Guantanamo Bay Naval Base is shut down. Army Lieutenant Colonel Samuel House told the AP that the move followed a threat from the hacktivist collective Anonymous. The group had called for a mass action on Twitter over the weekend to draw attention to the more than 100-day hunger strike by Gitmo detainees, many of whom have been cleared for release. At least 100 are on extended hunger strikes. 30 of them are being forcibly fed through nasal tubes. For FSRN, from Tampa, Florida, I'm Nell Abram.
I'm Dorian Marina in Los Angeles. Residents in Oklahoma are beginning the long process of recovery following yesterday afternoon's massive tornado that created an extensive path of destruction, leveling entire neighborhoods. Today, Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon described the damage after a tour of the region.
The path is very wide of the storm itself. It's about 20 miles long. We estimate it could have been up to 2 miles in width itself. We flew over the schools and got to see the terrible destruction of the schools themselves, certainly the business community and the friends and neighbors that lost their homes that we are very sad about.
Officials revised the death toll to 24 today, but that number could rise. Fallon said authorities had reported more than 200 injuries from the tornado. 30,000 people are still without power. The governor said the White House had approved the state's request for disaster assistance for 5 Oklahoma counties after 3 days of tornadoes, straight-line winds, and flooding. Fallon called Monday's tornado one of the most horrific storms the state has ever faced.
Yet in the midst of tragedy and loss of life, we've also seen the resilience and the courage and the strength of our people. And we will get through this, we will overcome, and we will rebuild, and we will regain our strength. Our hearts and prayers are certainly with those that have lost their loved ones. It has been a very, very hard experience, a heartbreaking experience, especially the loss of children and the schools themselves and those who haven't been able to find their loved ones and are still waiting to hear.
Governor Fallon said any resident affected by the recent storms should call 1-800-621-FEMA for more information or go online to okstrong.ok.gov. Mental health counseling services are also being set up at area shelters. Local officials in Moore said outreach to thousands of residents who do not have electricity will continue. Most of those, some 20,000, still are without power in the city of Moore. Gary Bird, fire chief for Moore, said search and rescue operations will continue through the evening.
We stayed at the school overnight, going through the school, and we stayed in several different locations back and forth, changing men out. And we had to pull off several times because of the weather, the lightning, but then we went back out. We are out. We started with a primary search yesterday and a secondary search. We made it through, I will say, most of the structures, most of the vehicles, most of the homes, but the ones that we didn't make it through yesterday, we will make it through today for sure, and a second and third time. We will be through every damaged piece of property in this city at least 3 times before we're done, and we hope to be done by dark tonight.
Local officials also encouraged residents to stay off phone lines except for emergencies and urged people to text instead. Earlier today, FSRN spoke to Terry Watkins with the Oklahoma Department of Emergency Management, who said that teams are searching through the hard-hit neighborhoods.
When we talk about search and rescue operations, what we're talking about is literally a door-to-door, picking up board by board, concrete pile by concrete pile, attempting to find any survivors. The Oklahoma Highway Patrol confirmed at one point 101 survivors had been found in rubble as they began the search operation on May 20th. That search operation will continue until the Moore Police Department decides that the search operation is over.
And what are you hearing from those involved in the search operation about what they're finding as they go through? What kind of destruction are they finding?
I have not been in direct communication with them. What their people are telling me is you have massive destruction. If you've seen the pictures, if you know what happens when a tornado hits, it's rubble when this type of damage is done. And so that's what they're finding. That's what they go through piece by piece and board by board.
At this point, what is the confirmed death toll and the number of those injured?
The confirmed death toll at this point is 24. That is the number of people that have been transported to the medical examiner's office and identified to their families as deceased. The total number of injured is 237. And those are divided into different categories by our health department and by the medical examiner. But as of right now, that total count is 237.
And for those who were displaced by the tornado, where are they now? What kind of services are available to them?
The wonderful thing is there are lots of services available to anyone who's displaced by the tornado. There are shelters that have been created by the Red Cross, by the Baptist Church community. There are shelters that are operating in Oklahoma County. There are still shelters that are operating over in the Shawnee area and the Bethel Acres area where the tornadoes occurred the day before. So those shelters are open. Additional shelters will be opened if needed. Talking to the Salvation Army and the Red Cross, I think there were 6 active shelters, 2 of them down in the Oklahoma City Moore area, to be able to handle those that needed it. There are also ongoing feeding operations for breakfast, lunch, dinner. The capability of many of these organizations is in excess of being able to feed 40,000 people at one time. So there are meals that are being served to the search and rescue operators, to those highway patrol troopers and military that are doing the perimeter checks. Meals, hot meals, will be available at all points in time, and that's an ongoing effort.
That's Terry Watkins with the Oklahoma Department of Emergency Management speaking to us earlier today. For more, we go to the Little Axe Resource Center of the Absentee Shawnee Tribe in Norman, Oklahoma. That's about 6 to 7 miles from Moore. It's one of the shelters in the area that is prepared to offer assistance to those who have been affected by the storms, and it's a community that was hit by a tornado last weekend. Naomi Barnard is an RN with the Red Cross, and she's working there. Ms. Barnard, what services are you offering to those affected by the recent weather?
We have just been feeding people right now, but we still have our sleeping facilities open, and that's about it.
The people you're seeing who are coming in there, how are they reacting to these latest storms? What are you hearing?
Well, I think 3 years ago when the tornado came through Little Axe, that was their first experience. Now they have gained experience, and they respond in a more experienced way.
What does the weather look like now? Can you describe what's outside the window?
It just got through raining, and we don't have any heavy winds or anything right now. Small breeze.
Naomi Barnard is an RN with the Red Cross. She's working with the Little Axe Resource Center of the Absentee Shawnee Tribe in Norman, Oklahoma. Thanks very much for your time.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. In Washington, D.C. today, lawmakers questioned Apple executives on how and why they used shell companies in Ireland, offshore accounts in several countries, and legal loopholes in the U.S. to avoid paying billions in taxes. Several Senate Democrats said the report shows the need for Congress to close tax loopholes and collect more corporate tax revenue, especially in a time of record corporate profits and dire shortfalls in government spending. But other Republican members of Congress drew the opposite conclusion and said the U.S. should lower its corporate tax rate to prevent more companies from following Apple overseas. On Capitol Hill, FSRN's Alice Olstein reports.
The senators, IRS officials, and corporate executives at Tuesday's hearing agreed that Apple did not break any U.S. or international laws by setting up three subsidiaries in Ireland, shifting more than $100 billion to them, and negotiating a deal with the Irish government to pay less than 2% in taxes. Apple CEO Tim Cook admitted under oath to the Senate Subcommittee on Investigations that one of these subsidiaries has no employees at all, and all three are run from the U.S. Arizona Republican John McCain, a co-author of the Senate investigation, called Apple's tax avoidance strategies unacceptable, convoluted, and pernicious.
Today, Apple has more than two-thirds of its total profits stashed away in an offshore account. That's over $100 billion that are not currently subject to U.S. corporate income taxes and therefore cannot be used to ease the deficit or help invigorate the same American economy that fostered the creation of this large corporation in the first place.
In his testimony, Cook defended his company's practices as legal and necessary and made several policy demands to the committee he said would benefit both Apple and the U.S. economy.
Eliminate all corporate tax expenditures, lower corporate income tax rates, and implement a reasonable tax on foreign earnings that allows the free flow of capital back to the United States.
Besides making these demands at public hearings, Apple spent nearly $2 million last year alone lobbying Congress and the Treasury Department to lower corporate taxes, according to the Center for Responsive Politics. The company also contributed nearly $30,000 to Mitt Romney and more than $300,000 to Barack Obama during this past election. Matt Gardner, the executive director of the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, said such corporate lobbying led to the creation of loopholes in the 1980s and 90s that Apple and other multinationals use today.
Congress has enacted laws and has preserved laws that make it easier for Apple and companies like them to shift their profits offshore. But it's when these tax breaks are enacted, it's not Congress that's dreaming them up. Every year, armies of corporate lobbyists descend on the Capitol. They're pushing for tax breaks for their favorite industries or even for specific companies. And, you know, Apple has been one of many companies whose lobbyists have been pushing for preservation of these tax breaks.
Some lawmakers, including Kentucky Republican Rand Paul, criticized the committee for holding the hearing in the first place, saying it was offensive to fault companies when the U.S. tax code carries the blame.
I say instead of Apple executives, we should have brought in here today a giant mirror.
Paul recently introduced a bill that would allow Apple and other corporations to bring profits they've stashed overseas back to the U.S. at just a 5% tax rate instead of the current 35%. But Gardner said the last time Congress approved a corporate tax holiday, in 2004, it did not have the promised outcome.
The idea was if we give these companies a tax break for repatriation, they'll bring all those profits back to the U.S., and, you know, invest in new factories, new capabilities, new workers. And, you know, the only clear winners from the last round of repatriation holiday were the corporations themselves and their shareholders. There's no evidence at all that this resulted in increase in employment, increased infrastructure, anything that we really want to see. And if Congress keeps offering these 5% tax rates, these get-out-of-jail-free cards, almost free cards, companies are going to continue engaging in this behavior where they ship their profits offshore, gambling that Congress is going to bail them out.
Other lawmakers want to go even further. Wisconsin Republican Ron Johnson suggested that the U.S. lower the corporate tax rate to zero and only tax shareholders for the profits they earn. But Levin and his fellow Democrats say they'll revive a bill they've tried to pass in several previous sessions of Congress to close these loopholes and make Apple and other corporations pay taxes on the profits they've moved overseas. Alice Ulstein, Free Speech Radio News, Washington.
In New York, families of detained undocumented immigrants protested last weekend against the detention and possible deportation of their family members. Many of these protesters were children whose fathers are in detention for deportation. FSRN's Salim Rizvi reports.
15 months ago, Abul Qasim was at his job at a perfume shop in Manhattan when a series of events happened that would change his family's life. Kashim's daughter Nausheen is in the sixth grade.
The police took him away from his store, and then like they stamped him, like they took his fingerprint, then they found out he was like undocumented.
Kashim had pending deportation orders in the asylum case he had filed some 20 years ago. The family says he did not know that his petition was denied in absentia by an immigration judge. Now he is locked up at a detention center in Orange County, New Jersey. Last weekend, children and other family members of detained undocumented immigrants protested in New York City's Union Square, demanding the release of their loved ones. When mothers and fathers are unable to work because they are locked up in detention, families can face serious financial difficulties. Kashim came here from Bangladesh 22 years ago, and his wife Nadira says he was the sole breadwinner for the family.
Sometimes we don't have food, like we don't buy the food like that actually. It's too horrible, right? Because my husband is the only one earning member in my family. And he loves. We are the loving family. I don't know, he deport, how I survive, and this is my life is not safe in this country. But I don't know what happened and what is my future, what is my kids' future. This is horrible, but this is their country, but we are helpless.
Well, my mom sold all her jewelry, and community friends are helping us. It's not only financial problems, but it's like my mom, her health is going bad, and it's like affecting my education, my brother's education. This one family, he has a son that's 12 years old in seventh grade. His name is Mahmoud Khan. His father has been detained for like 6 months. And his mom's health is not going good. And like another family is Samia Sharif. She's the daughter of Bablu Sharif. He has been detained for 7 months, and they are having a lot of financial problems.
Nausheen, who was born in the U.S., says she wants to be an attorney. She says her younger brother is a fourth grader with special needs. At the rally, protesters had some support from elected leaders. U.S. Senator from New York, Kirsten Gillibrand, also joined the kids and heard their stories.
They're so beautiful, and they not only do they break your heart, but they show how important this issue is for our communities. It shows how important it is for our future. These are our children who need their parents with them, who want just the opportunity to stay here, to be educated, and to be part of this growing community. I am very hopeful that with their voices being heard, we will have progress.
Lawmakers in Washington have been working on a bipartisan immigration reforms bill for months now. But in the meantime, the Obama administration continues deportations at record rates. It has deported around 400,000 immigrants every year since 2009, splitting up countless families across the country. Salim Rizvi, FSR in New York.
As Zimbabwe prepares for elections, President Robert Mugabe is set to announce a date for voting once the necessary reforms for free and fair elections have been met. The 89-year-old leader recently called for peace during and after the polls to avoid a repeat of the violence in 2008 that left more than 200 people dead. But human rights advocates say a culture of fear and intimidation continues as the police and intelligence agents arrest, harass, and prosecute human rights defenders critical of Mugabe. FSRN's Mishek Ruseri reports.
One of the groups that's been targeted with detentions, beatings, and abductions is the social justice organization Women of Zimbabwe Arise, known as WOZA. Despite a 2010 Supreme Court ruling ordering the state to stop interfering with its activities, members say repression has continued. This has prompted WOZA to file a complaint with the African Commission on People and Human Rights over what the group called repressive tendencies by the state. The group is led by Magonoba Mahlangu and Jenny Williams.
Makoto and myself have been arrested over 50 times in the last 10 years of WOZA's existence. This communication demonstrates Zimbabwe's clear and systematic pattern of suppression of WOZA's rights to engage in peaceful protest and public demonstrations.
Last February, more than 80 WOZA members were arrested, detained, and then released without charge for a St. Valentine's Day peaceful march in Harare. While in Bulawayo, members were also abducted and left at a graveyard during the night for protesting against water rationing. Williams say the Mugabe regime's behavior is in direct response to the recent uprising in North Africa and the Middle East that has led to the downfall of some of his top allies, including Muammar Gaddafi of Libya and Hosni Mubarak of Egypt.
After the so-called Arab Spring, repression increased and the Supreme Court ruling became completely ignored, leaving us without a route to hold police accountable and our right to freedom of expression and assembly severely reduced.
Some academics and pro-democracy activists say WOZA's complaints to the African Commission won't have much of an impact on the Mugabe regime, which has in the past defied a ruling by the same commission to relicense a local newspaper that had been shut down in 2003. Pezisai Ruanya is the director of Zimbabwe Democracy Institute.
What happened to them when they defied the Daily News case, when they defied the other rulings that came from the Banjul court? They will do it and they will continue to do business as usual because that court has no teeth.
The African Commission is yet to deliberate on WOZA's complaints. Should the ruling come in favor of the complainants, it could reduce or prevent further state attacks on the organization and its members. The legal team also wants the government to implement reforms so that abuses don't happen in the future. Belinda Chinowawa is part of the legal team.
The communication also asks that the commission recommend that the government of Zimbabwe conducts trainings, human rights trainings, of the ZRP and other organs of state that have been involved in the harassment of WOZA as part of a wider strategy of law reform.
The Southern African country's draft constitution includes specific provisions protecting the rights of assembly, expression, media freedom, as well as freedom of speech. Human rights groups applaud the new measures included in the Comprehensive Bill of Rights, which is considered sacrosanct and cannot be amended. Misha Kruseri, FSRN, Harare.
That's it for today's program. The newscast was produced by Catherine Kopp. Headlines editor was Nell Abram. Our Washington, D.C. editor, Alice Olstein. Our technical production team at KPFA Berkeley is Rose Katapshi and Janine Etter. We welcome your questions, comments, and news tips. Write to us, comments@fsrn.org. For more news stories, specials, and our documentaries, visit our website, fsrn.org, and follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fsrn. Thanks for listening. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina.